I guess in some ways this does sound a little bit like a Halloween story, doesn't it? Someone coming back from the dead wrapped in mummy clothing and stinking. And, you know, this Sunday is one of those interesting Sundays in that there are many things happening. We, as a country, celebrate Halloween. We don't necessarily celebrate All Saints Day as a country, but many churches do. And we also, in our local community, just had our chicken pie supper. So I did my best to write a sermon based on resurrection, which are our text, and chickens, as best as possible. In 1945, in the town of Fruitia, Colorado, there was an Olson family. They owned a small farm, barely made ends meet. And among other things, they raised chickens. Every 6 weeks or so, the husband Lloyd would butcher 40 to 50 chickens, and his wife Clara would clean them up, and then Lloyd would drive them to the meat market in town and sell them. So, excuse me. So one of these chicken butchering sessions is taking place, and Clara is clearing the dead chickens off the line when one of them gets up and just starts walking around. Not like the type of chickens that, you know, run around with their heads cut off and then die, but like walks around. They thought it was an oddity, so they let the bird walk around while they finished all of the dirty work. And after all the dirty work was done, it was still walking around. So they brought it into the porch and put it in an apple basket. And the next morning, the chicken was sitting there alive without a head. Lloyd decided to name this chicken Miracle Mike. And when he had to take the chickens to market that day, he took Miracle Mike with him. And while the meat processors were weighing all of the chickens and cutting the check, Lloyd went to the bar and bet people that he had a live headless chicken. And in order, if he could prove it, they would have to give him beer. So he drank a number of beers that day because he had this headless chicken with him. Well, news spread around town, and the local paper came and wrote about Miracle Mike, the headless chicken, who was still doing alive and who was still alive and well after a week so far. And pretty soon after that, a carnival person leader. Drove from Salt Lake City about 300 miles to visit Miracle Mike and Lloyd and thought that maybe this chicken should go on the road. This is really a headless chicken. I mean, if you can look at pictures online. The BBC wrote a great article about this. But first, what they did before going on the road is they took this chicken to the University of Utah and had him steadied. Apparently, most motor functions like breathing, heart rate, hunger, digestion, all of that happens in the rear part of a chicken's brain. And there was just enough rear part of the chicken's brain left for it to be alive, which is really gruesome. I know, this is like a gross story. But it's Halloween. We can tell gross stories on Halloween. And this kind of... this combination of having enough brain left and a blood clot that took place right when it needed to allowed this chicken to survive. Lloyd and Clara took great care of this chicken. They fed it with a syringe, food and water. I know, it gets even grosser, trust me. And for 18 months, Lloyd toured the country with Miracle Mike and went to farm shows and country fairs and things like that, And folks flocked, I know, to see Miracle Mike. Miracle Mike lived actually for 18 months after his headlessness took place. And so one day he passed away in a hotel room in Phoenix. And the family didn't make a lot of money off of this, but they did make some money to modernize their farm. They bought a couple of tractors and a hay baler, and they were able to buy a truck. So 1946, that's pretty good work for a headless chicken and for a small family. So what does Miracle Mike and Lazarus have in common? Our readings today, because our readings are from All Saints Day, tend to focus on resurrection. The Wisdom of Solomon reading, which is not in our Bibles here, but is in the Christian Apocrypha. So we'll see it like in Lutheran Bibles or Catholic Bibles. Both focus on this idea of resurrection, which in its various forms and beliefs is central to Christian faith. I think when we hear the story of Lazarus, we focus an awful lot on the resurrection of Lazarus. But I think that there are kind of two things in this story that we have from our Gospels that I'd like to focus on this morning. One has to do with this person of Lazarus. Lazarus is a really important character in our scriptures, in our Gospels. Jesus, in the Gospel of Luke, tells this parable about the rich man and Lazarus. In it, there is this very wealthy person who has a big house with a gate and eats well and wears fine clothes. And outside of that gate lies Lazarus, this man who has sores all over his body and is just waiting for scraps from the table of this rich person. And Lazarus, in this parable, dies in poverty. In the parable, Jesus talks about how his reward was found in heaven, and he condemns the wealthy person for walking by someone in such a destitute state every single day and not doing anything about it. It's a really interesting story and a difficult one, I think, for us to hear. Later on in the Gospel of John, after Lazarus has been raised from the dead here, we could say that this story actually preempts or kind of causes a lot of the ruckus at the end. Religious leaders see that Jesus has done something like raise the dead, or there are rumors of Jesus raising someone back to life, and they are concerned that this is going to cause an uproar in their town. This is going to change the power dynamics of their local communities when a person can do something like this, or when folks believe someone can do something like this. So the Gospel of John later tells us that the religious leaders plotted to kill Lazarus to silence this miracle, and that later on the plot to kill Jesus takes place as a result of this. So Lazarus is this really important character. He's also loved by Jesus in a way that is very intimate in the Gospel of John. When we read our Gospel, it says on several occasions that Jesus was in despair. I think maybe a good translation of that was, when Jesus heard this, his heart was broken. And we have Jesus crying twice in our Gospel of John. One is here when he hears of the passing of his friend, and then the other is on the cross. So when Jesus cries, something important is happening. Now, I think that the concept of resurrection is a very tricky one for people of faith. For some churches, literal resurrection is necessary for participation in that community. For others, resurrection means a great many things, and we're not quite sure what that looks like. One thing that strikes me in this passage is that people of faith have historically seen Jesus as the embodiment of God in this world. So what Jesus does is kind of like what God does. And to see Jesus with such compassion and sadness over the loss of someone is very touching. And it tells me that perhaps the love of God is something for us that is so strong that it transcends the most horrible things that we can experience. That is, for me, the coolest part of our faith. That we often can find ourselves in despair, and we know family members or we ourselves have faced despair currently or in the past. But our faith seems to tell us that no matter what, there is always hope for something good. That doesn't mean that people do not pass. That doesn't mean that we still do not struggle. But it means that there is always this chance for something resurrecting to happen in our lives. Wendell Berry, I've quoted Wendell Berry a billion times in this church. One of my favorite lines of his, of one of his poems is, "Practice resurrection." How do we practice resurrection? There was a recent article in The Guardian from the writer of The Poisonwood Bible. Does anyone remember her name? Kingsolver. Barbara Kingsolver. Okay, yeah. Thank you. She's written about religion and rural communities quite a bit. And the article is entitled something along the lines of, "It feels like we're living through the end of the world." It was a difficult article to read. Part of it was a book review of her most recent book, but she was talking about the despair that folks face on a day-to-day, day-to-day. And she talked about how she is an eternal optimist. And the writer of the article asked why she describes herself that way. And she said, because there's no other choice. I love that. You know, I think optimism doesn't shy away from the harsh realities of this world, but it does say there are better ways of being. And that's pretty powerful. I do have one more chicken story to share with you. We keep chickens at our house. And every once in a while, we have roosters that get too big and rowdy and need to be taken care of. And this is my least favorite job on our little homestead parsonage farm. But there were three roosters that needed to be dispatched and put in the freezer a couple of weeks ago. And in the afternoon, I got my knife. I took the first chicken out. I had read somewhere that it's better not to cut the head off entirely. It's more humane, supposedly. I don't believe that anymore, and I'll tell you why in a second. So you know, you hold the chicken, you cut its neck, and then you stab it in the brain. It's really gross. Again, it's Halloween. We can share gross stories. First chicken was taken care of. I went to get the second chicken. I cut its neck. I stabbed it in the brain. I went to go get the third chicken, and the second chicken ran away. I took the entire head off of the third chicken before looking for the second chicken, who had tried to hide in the bushes in between our place and the Robinsons. So this is happening when school lets out. Around 2:30, And as St. Jude's parking lot is full of families who whose kids do Taekwondo. So here I am in my dirty clothes with blood, head to toe, and a stick, for an hour beating bushes trying to chase this rooster out of the bushes, who does not want any part of me by now, for sure. And I had completely lost my nerve. I'm probably never going to kill a chicken ever again. So I called Leah, who is at the dentist with Cammy, and I say, Leah, the chicken is running around. I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. And she's like, I'm at the dentist with Cammy. I can't really help you at all. Meanwhile, I'm like waving at kids who are walking home from school, like, oh, like, hi, everything's fine. I'm just looking for my chicken. This rooster ended up going back into the coop later that night and started crowing in the morning, bright and early. This chicken eats and drinks and acts like a rooster, chasing around the hens. Leah looked at its neck. I had missed the vital parts. And because I had stabbed it in the front of the head, I didn't affect any of its motor skills. And now we have decided to name this rooster Lazarus. Because after a near-death experience, it has come back to full life. I don't know if resurrection is literal or figurative, in all honesty. You know, I would think that I would have settled that question by now as a pastor. And certainly sometimes I want to believe it. But I know that practicing resurrection is a hopeful thing, because it reminds us that even in the most dire circumstances, we can turn something into good. Even when it feels like all hope is lost, our faith tells that's simply not true. And that's a pretty awesome message in my book. May God help us to practice resurrection this week in literal and figurative ways. Amen.